Earlier this week, the Orange County Sheriff's Office announced an arrest had been made in the murder of 18-year-old Devin Clark and 14-year-old Lyric Woods last month. The suspect is a juvenile, so their identity won't be made public, at least until the case gets referred to Superior Court. Yesterday, though, Orange County Sheriff Charles Blackwood released a video sharing his thoughts on the case.
As a husband, father, and now a grandfather, nothing scares me more than the thought of something happening to one of my family members. My heartfelt condolences therefore remain with the families and the friends of Devin and Lyric. I'm so very sorry for the pain and the period of fear and uncertainty we've all experienced in the aftermath of this tragedy. Now we must turn our attention to the next chapter in this case. As I said yesterday, the laws regarding juvenile confidentiality are ironclad, and I have no ability to set them aside. I understand how frustrating this is, and it may even seem unfair. To be honest, some of it seems unfair to me. However, my first duty was to determine who was responsible for this horrible tragedy and present that person to the court system. Now it is my duty to protect the integrity of this case and the rights of the individual involved. I asked for all of your patience with this process. Thank you very much.
That's Orange County Sheriff Charles Blackwood speaking there. Other crime news, Orange County officials have also charged two individuals with multiple felonies in connection with a string of convenience store break-ins last month. 44-year-old Patrick Crisp and 25-year-old Jaquacy Smith, both of Alamance County, are charged with break-ins in Eflin, Mebane, Hillsborough, and White Cross, and that's just in Orange County. Officials say the pair will likely face charges in other counties, too. The investigation is still ongoing. The sheriff's office says there was a third person involved in at least one of the break-ins. Down to Chatham County now, where the school board last night voted unanimously to appoint Julie Bridenstine to fill a vacant seat on the board representing District 1. Bridenstine is an attorney with two children at Chatham Grove Elementary School. Back in Chapel Hill, some residents have been pushing the town for years to add a splash pad facility, an increasingly popular type of water recreation space. Earlier this week, the town council got the results of a feasibility study and took the next steps in making that vision a reality. 97.9 The Hill's Brighton McConnell with the story.
Chapel Hill Parks and Recreation Director Phil Fleischman said splash pads are the buzz of the parks community.
The splash pad in particular is an amenity that's popping up everywhere in park systems. There are some nearby in Mebane and Pittsburgh, for example. So we'd really like to have one here.
After a petition of more than 800 Chapel Hill community members was delivered to the town last summer in favor of a splash pad, the Parks, Greenways, and Recreation Commission unanimously voted in favor to add one. That decision helped the town officially get started in its planning process, with the first step being where a splash pad might make sense. The feasibility study presented to the Chapel Hill Town Council on Monday shared data from 6 town parks and 2 public housing communities where potential splash pads might work. The assessment looked at areas with the right size, infrastructure, parking, and availability of utilities for a potential splash pad, as well as details like access, age of facilities, and socioeconomic data to help inform equitable decision making. Town council members shared they are largely in favor of a medium-sized splash pad, navigating the cost of building a destination-level fixture, but space bigger than a pocket park size. Many of the elected officials also vocally supported the recirculation model for the water in splash pads, meaning that the water would be collected, treated, and reused at the same site. Matching what the feasibility study suggested, Councilmember Amy Ryan said those two elements of a splash pad lead her to believe it would make sense for it to be near Chapel Hill's existing aquatic centers.
I think that co-locating where possible with pools is really smart, especially if we have existing restroom facilities. I mean, one of the things that really bumps up those prices is when we need to add parking, we need those restrooms, we need changing areas. So I think as you look at sites, that kind of co-location would be important to me.
That option narrows down the splash pad to 3 places: Community Center Park, Hargraves Park, and Homestead Park. Councilmember Paris Miller Fouché said of the 3, Hargraves Park stood out as the most attractive option to her.
I think it checks all the boxes in terms of being close to a trail, a greenway, downtown, population, our public housing. being able to upgrade the playground, all of it. So to me, Hargraves definitely rises to the top.
Many other council members agreed, adding that Homestead Park also presents itself as a good option based on the placement of existing water and sewer infrastructure and the availability of parking. Councilmember Adam Searing, meanwhile, took his endorsement of the locations a step further. He said he feels like Chapel Hill is lagging other towns of similar size in building such park attractions. He advocated for building more than one splash pad if the town had already identified multiple locations that fit their criteria.
I would say let's extend ourselves. Let's try and catch up a little bit to some of our other communities. We've been talking about this for a long time, and I think absolutely let's go ask what the community wants. But when I look at the work you've done, I think two destinations, Hargraves, most people, Homestead, most parking.
Any construction of a splash pad, however, is far from breaking ground. The Parks and Planning Departments will now ramp up community engagement efforts to see where residents would prefer the water space. Fleischman said there's another major component that still needs to be worked out too, where the town will get the money to pay for splash pads.
Well, at the current time, the projects are not funded, so really this exploration is a good first start at looking at what it would take to bring one here, and then there'll be later conversations that occur around the funding piece of this.
In Chapel Hill, though, from the town council to hundreds of community members, there is clear interest heating up for a new way to cool down. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.
In the courts, a guilty plea this week for a man who was accused in the overdose death of an 18-year-old. Nathan Windham of Hillsboro had been charged with second-degree murder, but on Tuesday he pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter in the death of Kevin Cummings back in 2018. Cummings died from overdosing on heroin laced with fentanyl, which he'd received from Windham in exchange for marijuana. On Tuesday, Windham apologized to Cummings' family. WRAL reports Cummings' mother embraced Windham afterward and said she forgave him. Windham will serve 27 to 42 months in prison on the manslaughter charge. His attorney says he's been sober for the last year and a half. In Raleigh, Duke Energy Progress is asking the State Utilities Commission to approve a rate increase starting next year. The utility wants a cumulative rate increase of 16% spread out over 3 years, with residential customers paying 19% more. Duke Energy Progress last raised rates in 2019. Duke Energy Carolinas will likely file its own rate increase request early next year. Back locally, the Durham City Council met yesterday but did not take any action on a proposal to create a downtown social district where people can drink on the sidewalk. Triangle Business Journal reporting that the final vote will come later this month. Council members will take up the issue at their meeting on October 17th. And finally, the Chapel Hill Carrboro NAACP is celebrating its 75th anniversary this month with a series of public events. It all culminates with a gala dinner on October 22nd, but it kicks off this Saturday at 4 tomorrow with a community read-in at the Chapel Hill Public Library. Deborah Stroman is the co-chair of the event. I spoke with her earlier this week.
Now, this is very near and dear to my heart. So we have the Umoja read-in, and it is indeed a celebration of our culture, of Black culture. And we do that through literature and we do that through food. We're just going to have an amazing group of community folks who are going to read their favorite, one of their favorite passages or poems from Black writers. We're also going to sprinkle in some song. We're also going to sprinkle in some spoken word. We'll have African drumming. And then we're all going to move out to the beautiful terrace and eat food. African, Afro-Cuban, African-American soul food. So if you really want to get your belly filled, come out.
Who are some of the readers, performers?
We've got Anna Richards, who's also my co-chair, who is an Orange County commissioner. We've got Karen Stegman, town council. Michelle Laws, Dr. Michelle Laws will be reading. Flyleaf Books, the owner, Jamie, is going to read. We've got students from UNC. We've got Dr. Leah Cox, who's the chief diversity officer for the university. We've got the student spoken word group, ERAT, is performing. So it's just going to be a wide range of good people. CJ Soup will be performing as well. And I'm really excited about this because oftentimes community comes together in tragedy. When we have a very disturbing racial incident, when someone's been harmed, unnecessary death. But we need to come together just to celebrate and show that we see the humanity, the God seed in all of us. So I'm excited about the entire month, all the events, but let's just celebrate life. Let's celebrate one another.
That's Deborah Stroman speaking there. You can get the full conversation in the This Morning with Aaron Keck section of our website, chapelboro.com. And for more details on the 75th anniversary celebration, visit naacp75.com. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by Olmaz Jewelers. Fifth-ranked Carolina women's soccer got an easy win last night, 4-0 over number 13 Pitt. Four different players scored, starting with Sam Meza. She got the game winner in the 12th minute. Tar Heels back in action this Sunday, hosting NC State. And tonight, the Tar Heel men get their turn. They're hosting Virginia Tech at 7. That game, just part of a busy day today on the Tar Heel sports calendar. Top-ranked UNC field hockey also in action at BC, starting at 4. UNC volleyball also on the road at Wake Forest tonight at 7. And tonight's the night for live action with Carolina basketball, 7:30 in the Smith Center. That's free and open to everyone. A lot of excitement for Carolina basketball this year, especially on the men's side, where ESPN has the Tar Heels at number 1 in the nation in their way too early rankings for the upcoming season. And of course, Tar Heel football back on the field tomorrow, looking to stay unbeaten in ACC play when they hit the road to face Miami. With your preview of that one, 97.9 The Kills, Michael Coe.
When the Tar Heels take the field in Hard Rock Stadium Saturday afternoon, they'll do so looking to win their fourth straight game over Miami and move to 2-0 in the ACC Coastal Division. But to do that, everyone in the Carolina program knows a key is self-preservation. Specifically, self-preservation of their star quarterback. Redshirt freshman Drake May has shown no fear when taking to the air on runs this season, but he has struck fear into the hearts of the UNC sideline. Last weekend's leap against Virginia Tech, after which May stayed down with the breath knocked out of him, may have been the final straw. UNC head coach Mac Brown said he had to lay out some ground rules for May after that play.
I told him he's too important to our team not to take care of himself better. And there'll be times if it's fourth and one, and if it's you're on the goal line, you got to score to win the game, I got it. Go for it, man. But take a third and two and step out of bounds. Don't leap. And you gotta love his competitiveness. You gotta love his nature. That's growing up with a bunch of boys in the house. He had to fight and compete. And he feels like he's competing, and I got it. He needs to do a better job taking care of himself.
Offensive coordinator Phil Longo took it a step further, calling upon May's parents to intervene for his greater good.
So I've now recruited mom and dad. And I think Coach strategically used the word, we don't want to be selfish, right? And selfish in that, let's be smart, because we want to be able to get up after these jumps and after these plays and be able to help the team on the next play and the next day and the next game.
May will face one of his stiffest challenges of the season in Miami. Though the Hurricanes' defense ranks in the middle of the pack in terms of yardage allowed, Miami has only allowed 9 offensive touchdowns in 4 games. By contrast, Carolina has scored 10 offensive touchdowns just in its last 2 games. Longo compared Miami's defense favorably to Notre Dame's, praising its speed and athleticism.
Sometimes you find more game changers with some teams than others. Sometimes you find more weaknesses with some teams than others. There aren't many with Miami. They are very talented. It's a fast football team. They cover ground really, really well. And so it's definitely for everybody, receiver right on down to the O-line, I think it's going to be a huge athletic challenge this week.
Opposing May in the quarterback battle will be Miami's Tyler Van Dyke. Van Dyke burst onto the scene as a freshman in 2021, nearly leading the Hurricanes to a comeback win in Keenan Stadium and being named ACC Rookie of the Year. Van Dyke's sophomore year has been disappointing thus far, and he was even benched in Miami's last game, but UNC defensive coach Gene Chizik praised the quarterback's skill set and noted Carolina's defensive line play will be critical to a winning effort Saturday.
He's a big guy, 6'4", and he can see. But it's his confidence and his accuracy that really makes him the quarterback that he is. And when he's got time now, he can do it. So he'll be the best one. He'll be one of the best ones we've played for sure. Again, everything comes down to pass rush and being able to get some pressure and things of that nature, because if you don't get it on him, he can shred your defense.
Carolina's defense has been shredded more often than not this season. But last weekend's performance against Virginia Tech, albeit against a poor offense, represented a major step in the right direction. Now, against a Miami team coming off a bye week, Brown is challenging the defense to continue playing with the confidence it displayed against the Hokies.
We've had 2 wins on the road, but now we're going against the best team we've played on the road. So can you continue to get better? You want to take your confidence and have it grow with your defense, and instead of being complacent, feeling pretty good about yourself. And that's been a problem for us.
A 2-0 start in the Coastal Division with a head-to-head tiebreaker over the Hurricanes is a tantalizing prospect for the Tar Heels. And looking ahead, it could also potentially set up a clash of 5-1 teams when UNC takes on Duke in Wallace Wade Stadium next Saturday. But if we've learned anything from Carolina football, it's that looking ahead is as dangerous as a Drake May leap inside the five. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Michael Coe.
Kickoff time tomorrow is 4 p.m. Our coverage on 97.9 The Hill begins at 1 with Inside Carolina Live.